challenges that Nehemiah is faced with and that he must overcome. Remember, he was the cupbearer to King Artaxerxes, and he had asked for permission to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the city walls. And remember that what we studied Wednesday night, his face was sad. I use this sometimes to the kids at school. I can always tell when something's bothering them. The king noticed his face was sad and asked him what was wrong. And he made the comment, how can I be happy when my city, my home is in ruin? The king says, what shall I do for you? What was the phrase that we looked at? It said, and Nehemiah prayed. And I always use that as an example that prayers don't have to be real long. If you think about it, the king asked him a question. Is he going to wait a long time to answer that question? No, but he prayed, albeit a short one, for God's help that when he said what he had to say, the king would be amenable for that. It had been 140 years since Jerusalem had been burned. And it had been 90 years since Cyrus gave permission to Zerubbabel to go home. And that basically was plenty of time for the city to have become prosperous again. However, the city was still a charred pile of rubble. They had a temple that had been completed, but there was nothing else. You know, you stop and think. A few of us, were here in 1974 when that devastating tornado outbreak came. Do you still see stuff in rubble from that one? No, but you do from the one a few years ago. But 90 years, you would think they could have rebuilt the thing, but they didn't. Nehemiah was deeply grieved over the situation. Well, the bulk of the trouble he's going to face in leading the remnant to rebuild Jerusalem walls doesn't start until chapter 4, and that's where we are starting our class today, Nehemiah chapter 4. These challenges that we face today, and we can use Nehemiah's example. We can use his example of godly resolve, his example of going to God in prayer, to help us in our situations today, because our situations generally will come into the same categories that his situations came from. They were external and they were internal challenges that he was faced with. You'll see the E and the I. We'll see those throughout this series of things on the board. First six verses of chapter 4, he had to endure mocking. This is psychological. And all of us today are in situations where people may say things to us or behind our back about us, and we hear about it. How do we react? Well, Sanballat, who's already been discussed as one of the bad men, he was the governor of Samaria. He said, these people, Jews, can't possibly succeed. And this was spoken in front of very wealthy men who could put pressure. And then Tobiah, the Ammonite, said, wow, that wall they're building, it couldn't even stand up if a fox walked on it. But notice what Nehemiah does. He again prays, and they just keep on working. Prayer and work continue. And then the opposition continued to be worse. But the wall was built to half its height. Why? Because the people had a mind to work. No doubt that mind to work was very much encouraged by Nehemiah. Who's the man in the New Testament that was an encourager? Barnabas. Encouraging others to do good work. When they do work, complimenting them for that. It just makes people want to work that much harder. So Nehemiah was a good leader. All right? It started to get worse. Things began to turn violent. Basically, the enemies were starting to employ more drastic measures. There was plots to attack the builders. And we understand when Nehemiah, in verse 9, when he heard of this, what does it say? But we prayed to our God, and because of them, we set up a guard against them day and night. In other words, they did pray to God, but they were going to work their prayer because they were going to help themselves. They didn't do it relying strictly on themselves. Prayed to God to give them the strength to do what was necessary to protect themselves. They posted guards day and night. Verse 10, they themselves were growing weary. Look what it says. In Judah it was said, the strength of the burden bearers is failing, yet there is much rubbish, and we ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. They had to overcome disappointment and despair. The verses say that 10 times the people around about Jerusalem would come in basically and warn them, hey, they're getting ready to attack you. And yet, their enemies heard that the Jews were getting prepared, and says God frustrated them in their plan. From that day onward, Nehemiah arranged the men so that half of them worked and the other half stood guard. And no doubt they would take turns. You work for a while, then you stand guard for a while. It's almost like when we work today and we need a break. Some of you call it coffee break. I call it coke break. So I get my caffeine. You rest, and then you work some more. Well, half would stand guard and half would work. Those who worked, though, even carried their load with one hand, and they carried their weapon in the other hand. So they were on the guard, on the ready. And when the people, Sanballat, Tobiah, and crew saw that they weren't going to get a surprise attack, they did not attack. Nehemiah had instructed them. He said, we're spread out around the walls. We're working on them in all places. He said, if you hear the sound of the trumpet, everyone rally to that point because that's where the attack is coming from. But they weren't attacked. And also encouraged all the laborers to stay inside Jerusalem at night. And some of the Nehemiah and his men and some of the others even slept with their clothes on so that they could jump up and be ready at a moment's notice. When it said the laborers stayed inside, remember Jerusalem was not heavily populated at this time. So most of the workers were coming from around about, and it was their families that had heard and sent word, hey, they're fixing to attack you. That's where that word was coming from. Well, there was another thing that Nehemiah had to deal with, and that was usury. Now, the Jews, in the first five verses, it talks about what they had gone through. They had and were still facing a famine, and some of the Jews had mortgaged their property. Others had sold their families into slavery, and it says, we, our sons and daughters, are many. For us to eat and stay alive, we must get grain. Others were saying, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine. They had even had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on their fields and vineyards. And they said, although we are of the same flesh and blood as our countrymen, and though our sons are as good as theirs, yet we have had to subject our sons and daughters to bondage. Some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but we are powerless because our fields and vineyards belong to others. Well, Nehemiah was angry about this. The law of Moses forbade an Israelite to charge interest on any loan made to a fellow Israelite or to force a fellow Israelite to become a bondservant in order to repay a loan. They could charge foreigners, but they could not charge the Jews. These two verses you see on the overhead from Exodus and Leviticus indicated that what they were now doing was a sin, and yet they weren't obeying the law. Nehemiah offered himself as an example, and you should not be doing this. He continued to be an example by not adding financial burdens to the remnant. It mentions in verse 17 that he even fed 150 people each day at his table. Remember, the laborers coming in from around about didn't have a place, didn't have a house in the city to go home at noon or in the evening and eat. So he was feeding this many each day, setting that great example. And in verse 19 of chapter 5, Nehemiah says, "Remember for my good, O my God, all that I have done for this people." In chapter 6, Nehemiah's enemies attempt to entrap him, attempt to get him to compromise. And this is possibly the most dangerous challenge that he faced. Why? Because it's sort of a subtle one. It's not one that you see direct coming on you directly. It can be nice. People can be ask you. They were asking him to come out and to meet with them. But going out to meet with them under the guise of "we need to speak to you about some concerns" would only accomplish one thing, and that would be the stoppage of the Lord's work. Their plan, though, basically wasn't just to meet and talk with him. They were going to harm him, possibly even kill him. In verse 3, Nehemiah responds by saying, "I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you?" Well, that wasn't good enough for them. So they sent an open letter, which basically is telling everybody else, "Hey, Nehemiah is refusing to come down to us." It's like they wanted the people to put pressure on Nehemiah to go down and sent them. They sent the letter, and the letter contained this. It said, "The report's going around among the nations that you and the Jews are building the walls of Jerusalem because you are planning a rebellion, and that you are going to make yourself king. It is said you have appointed prophets in Jerusalem to say there is a king in Judah. If word of this gets back to the king, you will be in serious trouble. It would therefore be worth your time to come meet with us." Trying again, put public pressure on him. It was a false charge of treason and rebellion to Artaxerxes. It wasn't true, but they were making it up and trying. You know, someone says something about you, you sometimes we want to go and defend yourself, right? And say, "That's not me. I'm not doing that." Well, he just sent word that it was a false charge. Well, another attempt to discredit Nehemiah was an attempt to try to make him commit a sin. One day Nehemiah went to the house of Shemaiah. Shemaiah had been hired by Sanballat and Tobiah to intimidate Nehemiah so that he would commit a sin. He said, let's go into the temple. That's not the place. Nehemiah knew that he wasn't supposed to go there. In verse 11 of chapter 6, should a man in my position run away? Or should one like me go into the temple to save his life? No, I will not go. They wanted to damage his credibility, hoping that that would halt the work. Remember, why were the people working so hard? Nehemiah was their leader, their encourager. He had prayed to God. They believed in the work they were doing. They followed him. And if his credibility was damaged, more than likely they would have stopped the work. Sanballat and Tobiah were smart in thinking that. But Nehemiah did not fall to the challenge. Both times Nehemiah prays. Chapter 6, verses 15 through 16, the wall is completed. You know, back in chapter 1, verse 3, what's it say? The remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. And yet, in 52 days, under Nehemiah's leadership, it was repaired. And remember all those years that they could have worked on it, but they didn't. Well, completing the wall completely deflated the enemies. And they weren't through, though. Verses 17 through 19 talks about the many letters that were sent from many of the people in Judah to Tobiah, and that Tobiah letters would come to them, and many people in Jerusalem were bound by oath to him because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechah. So people were speaking about Tobiah's good deeds. And basically, this is pressure praising Tobiah to try to put Nehemiah down. Yes. Very, very good example. Is that something we can use today? Can we teach our children to do that today? You know, how many of you watch professional baseball? And you see some, especially the ones I think from the Latino countries, that do the crucifix as they step into the batter's box. What's wrong with an individual, a Christian, asking for God's help as he steps into the batter's box? Give me the strength and the ability to stay on this pitch, etc. Short prayers can be short. I remember teaching, 25, 30 years ago, Wayne. And okay, everyone knows my daughter is deaf. Before she was born, we teach our two boys, bow your head, close your eyes during prayer. And then she's born deaf, and we have to change our approach, because as she grew and we learned to sign, she learned sign language. Well, obviously, if her eyes are closed, she could not see me signing a prayer, correct? So we learned to pray with our eyes open. And I was teaching a class with Wayne one time, and he's talking about, we're talking about teaching on prayer. It's where I learned that ACTS, A-C-T-S, if a prayer contains adoration, confession, supplication, thanksgiving, what else is needed in the adoration of God? Anyway, he was talking about that one of the times he has available to pray is when he's driving to Decatur. Obviously, he better not have his eyes shut and his head down, right? So there are many, many opportunities for us to pray without the formal, different than the formal prayer that we're going to have in our service this morning. Good point. The walls rebuilding was now over, and Nehemiah seems to focus on building something else, and that being the remnant Jews into a community of believers. He appoints men to govern Jerusalem. And most of chapter 7 is the genealogy, the people that God had been making from the days of Eve until now about the promise that God had been making from the days of Eve until now about the one who would come to bless all nations and defeat Satan. You know, Genesis 3:15, 12:3. It had not yet been fulfilled. So it was very important for the Jews to keep their genealogy records correct. Otherwise, it would be impossible for the Messiah to prove he was of the proper lineage in order to fulfill all the prophecies of the Old Testament. Hence, it's why we see chapters throughout the Bible dedicated to listings of genealogies so that Christ's lineage could be proved and the prophecies fulfilled. Well, he's going to need the help, the aid of Ezra. Remember, Ezra had been there all this time. What was he, about 13 years ahead of Nehemiah or so. He enrolls everyone by the genealogies, by the census. He finds the records to list those that had returned 91 years earlier under Zerubbabel, and he records it again. And Ezra continues to teach. You know, he read from the book of the law of Moses, and the people stood for hours. They had asked him to read the law. It was actually required. We can read in Deuteronomy 31 about this. And when he opened the book, they stood and listened from early morning until, I put in noon, until midday, I think some versions say. We sit and listen to Steve preach. Would we want to stand for that 40, 45 minutes? It'd be sort of hard on most of us, but the people stood. It speaks that there were translators. Why the need of translators? They're reading from the book of the law of Moses. They were Jews. Why do you think they needed translators? They had been scattered all over the known world. Most of them probably at this time spoke Aramaic, which was the language of the countries that Mesopotamia, the people from up there. Some of them knew some Hebrew. You know, we have bilingual people today. Oscar, born here in America, and so were his parents, but he grew up bilingual, and that's been a great benefit. He's using that today in this week to teach and to preach and have classes. He could speak both English and Spanish very, very fluently. Remember how many years these people were gone? Until the first group returned, and now this is some 90 years later. Look at all that length of time. These people, some of them may have known Hebrew, but most of them may not have. So they needed translators to explain to them the things found in the law. Well, the reading caused the people to weep and to mourn. And during this time, the Feast of Tabernacles is observed. They had not been doing that. He read publicly each day of the 7-day feast, and a solemn assembly was held on the 8th day. They confessed, chapter 9, they confessed their sins. They realized all that they had been neglecting to do. Yes. Good point. Preachers preach from the Word of God. I remember the first lesson I ever preached, and I was under pressure. Hiram Hutto was in the audience up in Peoria, Illinois, and he made the comment. He said, "Lots and lots of scripture was used in today's lesson, and that's what we need, using God's word instead of some other stuff." Good point. And all of this put together with what Mike said, and they're standing, and they're listening, and they're mourning, and they're crying, and they're confessing their sins, is a great indication that they were taking their return home very seriously. During the reading of all this, there was a very good review of Israel's sinful past, history, in case they needed to be reminded of it, what they had, their forefathers had done, and the coming out from it. And the admission that God had dealt with them justly and fairly during this. And finally, of course, we know, we've already studied, he'd reached the end of his limit and allowed them to be taken into captivity. Well, chapter 9:38, "Now because of this, we are making an agreement in writing, and on the sealed documents are the names of our leaders, our Levites, and our priests." And then there's a listing of those in right there. This was their pledge to be faithful. It was indicated by numerous actions that they had taken. There would be no more intermarrying. This is what they promised. They promised not to intermarry with their foreign neighbors. There would be no more Sabbath trading among themselves or with the pagan people round about. There would be an annual contribution regarding the upkeep of the temple. They also promised to forego planting crops in the seventh year and to cancel all debts at that time. They would have the make sure that the contributions were made for the temple upkeep and that they would share the responsibilities for the temple functions. And verse 39b, we will not neglect the house of God. Jerusalem is again inhabited. Chapter 11, the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem, but the rest of the people cast lots to bring out 1 of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city, while 9 tenths remained in the other cities. So it was people moving back in who had not lived there. Not everybody, but they wanted to inhabit the city. They had to make it grow and remain viable. And so some of the people were able to move in. There's another listing of Levites and priests who returned with Zerubbabel 91 years earlier. Chapter 12, verses 27. Interesting, the walls are dedicated. And there were two groups, one led by Ezra and one by Nehemiah, and they marched around the top of the walls. When they met, that was the finishing of it, the complete dedication. And okay, the temple's operations functionals are taken care of. People assigned to do the daily task in the temple. And notice in chapter 13, why were foreigners excluded from all of this? Turn back to Deuteronomy, chapter 23, 3 through 5. 23, 3 through 5. Someone want to read that for us? Ready? Go ahead. Okay, it goes back to their leaving the land of Egypt, going into the land of Judah. So none of these foreigners were excluded. And this included Tobiah and his private room in the temple. And this is a period of time when Nehemiah had returned. Remember when he got permission to leave, the king wanted to know how long will you be gone? Probably hard for him to say exactly, but I think he was gone, 12 years or so? And he had returned unto Susa. And while he was gone, look how quickly, even after all those promises, look how quickly the people had sort of should I say back? I think I put backsliding up there. He had returned to Susa after going back to see the king to find out about this, and he threw Tobiah out. He cleansed the room and started using it for what it was intended to be used for. Tobiah was a foreigner. Even he had married a Jew, but he himself was a foreigner. So when Nehemiah got back, he threw him out, threw all of his belongings out, and returned the use of that room for what it was intended for. The storage, I think, of utensils and for the grain, for the temple use. Yes. In case you didn't hear that, when they dedicated the walls and marched around, that's a lot of people on top of those walls. And Tobiah is the one that had said those walls won't even support the weight of a fox. And they showed him. Yes. That was hundreds of years earlier. Not sure how long Nehemiah stayed away, but long enough for the people to backslide. The tithes are restored. I see my time is nearly up. The Sabbath observance is reinstituted. Mixed marriages again forbidden. And he reminded them about Solomon. Solomon had sinned because of his mixed marriages. Throughout all of these challenges that Nehemiah faced, he did not lose sight of one of the most constant attributes of Nehemiah's relationship with God, how often he prayed. That's it. Thank you for your attention.